conclusions, mine being that I must lose no time in tapping Napier for my ticket home. Just for interest, I asked Speedy, when we were making ready for our departure up country, how he thought Napier might set about the campaign, and was shocked when he said coolly that his only hope was to go hell for leather for Magdala with a small force. Trust to luck he'd find the prisoners there, and hightail it back to civilization double quick. You went with Grant to Peking, didn't you? And Gough to the Sutlej. Aye, and Sherman to the sea. He shook his shaggy head.
"'Tain't that kind of trip. They knew where they were going, with proper transport, commissariat, lines of communication, knowing who and where their enemy was, and with force enough to do the trick. Napier's got none of that. As that old Baluch said, it's time and the country he's up against, and all he can do is raid and run.
Man to man, what are the odds?" He thought for a moment, tugging his beard.
"Even chance. 6-4 against if 'twas anyone else, but Napier's the best since old Colin Campbell. Yes, I'd risk a monkey on him, if I had one."
He was all action now, breaking the seals on one of the strong boxes, and having the glittering mass of Maria Theresa's transferred to saddlebags by the marines, with the sergeant watching like a hawk to see that no coins stuck to crafty fingers. He made them strip to their drawers and bare feet to make sure no one slipped cash into his clothing, and Twentyman again gave thanks that the 33rd weren't on hand.
"Aye, a parcel of Fenian thieves," says Speedy,
"but well worth their salt when they form square. Did you hear that they went on an almighty drunk, and when Cooper swore they'd be left down country, their spokesman asked for 50 lashes a man if only they could join the advance? What could Cooper do but pardon them, the impudent rascals?" The provost marshal was called to take charge of the remaining boxes, and I commended my bootnecks to him as the best guard for the dollars he could hope to find. Their sergeant smiled for the first time in our acquaintance, and I supplied a little touch of flashy by thanking him and his file for their good and trusty work, shaking hands with each man by name, which I knew must go well. "Popularity, Jack, that's me." The weight of the specie was such that we needed half a dozen beasts apart from our own, and Speedy decided that so many led horses must slow us down, so a half-section of the Sindhe horse were whistled up, stalwart frontier riders in the long green coats and trousers, with red sash and pudgeree that I hadn't seen since the mutiny, each man with a twin-barrelled rifle and sword, not the chaps I'd have picked myself, since half of them were Pathans who'd sooner steal than sleep. But Speedy swore by them, and, to my gratification, their havildar was a leathery veteran from the Mogala country, who claimed to remember Bloody Lance, as he addressed me, pouring out the old tale of how Iflashman slaughtered the 4 Gilzeas. So much lying tommy rot, you understand, but I dare say I could still dine out on it in the caravanserais along the Jugdalak road. We saddled up, Speedy inspecting the saddlebags on every Sindhi, and then we set ahead through the bedlam of the camp. 5 miles it stretched from the Zula Causeway on either side of the railway tracks, with the 2 locomotives puffing and squealing up and down. They weren't used on the causeway itself, for fear of their weight causing a landslip. What with piled gear, work gangs, ab vendors who'd set up their stalls as a bazaar in the tent lines, and no attempt to bring order to the camp, it took us the best part of an hour to reach open country, and Speedy cursed the delay. I didn't mind, for there was plenty to take the eye, chiefly the Shoho girls with their saucy smiles and hair frizzed into great turbans, bare to their loincloths, and well pleased with the catcalls they drew as they sashayed along with their pots balanced on their heads.
"Fine crop of half-caste babes they'll be by Christmas," says Speedy. "Can't blame our fellows either. 'Tain't often they run into beauties like these beyond the borders."
There was an elephant train loading up on the edge of the camp, half a dozen of the enormous brutes kneeling, each beside a sloping ramp up which the great mortars and Armstrong guns were being hauled to be secured on platforms on the elephants' backs. Speedy explained that there was no other way the heavy artillery could be carried through the ravines and along the narrow winding paths cut into the cliffsides in the high country. The lighter mountain guns could be taken apart and carried by led mules. That old Baluch Major was right, you see. We stand or fall on animal transport. Without it, we're dead in our tracks in the middle of nowhere.